My name is David Horan. I'm a freelance director, a screenwriter, and the current artistic director of Bewley's Cafe Theatre.
I'm Michael James Ford, former artistic director of Bewley's Cafe Theatre, which was established in 1999 by Kelly Campbell and myself. But the Oriental Room in Bewley's had been used as a theatre prior to that. And I believe it was Kay Sheehy with her sister Joan who walked into that room in the mid-90s and thought it would be a very suitable place to put on plays. And the project were in exile at the time. The old project had been torn down. Fiacc MacAneill was in charge. And it was done. The first show in the Oriental Room was a production of Frank McGuinness's adaptation of Strindberg's The Stronger and Pirandello's The Man with the Flower in His Mouth. A number of other plays were put on around that time, including Bernard Shaw's Village Wooing, which was first done with myself and Barbara Lee Queeve.
I'm Kelly Campbell. I'm a co-founder of Bewley's Cafe Theatre, along with Michael James Ford. I'm also an actress and a director and a writer, and I guess sometime producer. I would have worked in Bewley's of Grafton Street, which is my family's business, as a teenager under Tatton's on the mezzanine. I suppose I have a relationship with the building. I had returned from university and drama school. I'd been in drama school in London, and so I'd been away from Dublin for about 5 years and came back, and I didn't know anyone, but I was a very hungry kind of young actress, and I suppose I had a lot of other strings to my bow because the degree I'd done in the University of Ulster Coleraine was quite all round, and I'd done lighting design, I'd done performance photography, I'd done directing and acting and producing. So I had a huge appetite to do stuff. My brother Cole Campbell was managing Bewley's of Grafton Street at the time, and I had been aware of the productions going on upstairs in the Oriental Room, and that there had been a lapse in time between the productions, and I was aware of that there was a vibrancy in Dublin at the time, and I thought it would be good to see that room used on a more permanent basis. So I approached my brother and said, "What's the story with the room up there? Is there anyone using it?" And he said, "No, well, from time to time, but what were you thinking?" And I said, "Well, someone should be in there doing stuff. It seems like it would be a good use of that room to have a kind of more, some cultural activity, and it would be good for the business as well." So not knowing anyone, I had researched who was involved in the running of the shows, and I got Barbara Lee Creeve's number. But Michael Ford picked up the phone and I told him what I was ringing for, and it went from there. He didn't even let me speak to Barbara. We met the next day in Bewley's of Grafton Street, and he was as certain as anything that this was going to happen. He just totally jumped on board with the idea. And then I got really scared of the commitment of it.
I came on board in 2007. My first experience with Bewley's Cafe Theatre was when I made a show called The World's Wife, an adaptation of poems by Caroline Duffy. And Michael James Ford came to see it. I was working with Esau Golden and Carmel Stevens at the time. And he instantly said, "You should do that at lunchtime in Bewley's."
My name is Isolt Golden. I'm an actor, a writer, a director, and I'm also administrator for Bewley's Cafe Theatre since 2007. My first performance there was with my newly founded theatre company, Inish Theatre, which I founded with Carmel Stevens and David Horn. And our very, very first show was called The World's Wife by Caroline Duffy, which is a wonderful piece of poetry with characters like Mrs. Darwin and Queen Kong and Mrs. Faust. So from the voices of the wives or women behind famous men. It's very, very funny. And Michael James Ford saw it and gave us our chance to put it on a Bewley's Cafe Theatre, which was very important because it was a chance for us to really get reviewers in to build the reputation of the company. And then the company went on to create a number of adapted works and then an original work with probably our most successful play, which was Tick My Box, and which opened in Bewley's Cafe Theatre in 2004 as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival there.
Tick My Box was a devised piece we made ourselves about the speed dating experience, where the two actresses played all the speed daters in one night of a play. So they ended up dating themselves by the end of the evening. And we made it for the Bewley's Cafe Theatre stage, which is a small stage in the corner of the room, but like a lot of shows that started Bewley's, it had a much larger reach. We ended up playing 500-seater theatres in the Helix, the Opera House in Cork, as well as playing Edinburgh. We went to the biggest theatre festival in the world, the Edinburgh Fringe. We even played the Outlaws Festival in Finland, where the play got translated and still running to this day.
So my family company, Campbell Catering, took over Bewley's in the 80s. So that entailed all of the cafes and the coffee production, the bakery, a chocolate factory. And so part of that was Bealey's of Grafton Street. And I guess there's a follow-on from the Quaker philosophy. The Quakers, as they ran Bealey's, they were very philanthropic as well as charitable. I think the philosophy is kind of all-reaching. And writers like Yeats and Joyce and associated with Bealey's visiting the cafe as well as artists. It was the era of the great coffee house. For people who may not have had nice living rooms, it was the living room, you know, so it was a social space for people to go and integrate every day, you know, office workers, as well as kind of artistic community. So it was a hub of activity. And so you'd see well-known people around, you know, as well as musicians. And that died away as housing improved and also smaller cafes opened. It became less of a focus. But I think it's retained a sort of an association with that level of cultural activity. So my family were very artistic. My father, who established Campbell Catering with my mother in the 60s and still is running the company, in his 50s decided he wanted to kind of take more of an interest in art and took up painting and then subsequently sculpting. And he's, I suppose, a well-known sculptor in his own right, Paddy Campbell. And he puts on a Christmas show every year of his smaller works. My brother is a well-known, well, British artist. I guess he's more recognised in Britain than in Ireland. Duncan Campbell is his name. He represented Scotland at the Venice Biennale this year. And we'll have an exhibition in Emma, a solo show in Emma next year. My sister is a filmmaker. And my little brother is also a film producer. He's had a very successful run this year with a film called A World Not Ours. It won a lot of prizes at all the film festivals this year, including Best Film at the Edinburgh International Film Festival and the Peace Film Prize at the Berlin Award, and including an Audience Award. So it's, I'm very proud of all my family, and in the sense that we have artistic lives as well as being a business family. I guess I grew up talking about Bealey's at the kitchen table. You know, it was a very important part of our family life as well as what we do. And I guess for me, establishing the Cafe Theatre has been a contribution. Without having to go and do what I did as a teenager, working in the factories or the bakery or the cafes every summer, I decided I'd rather do something that I could contribute my skills as an actress and a producer and a director. Yeah, it's very important for the Campbell Bealey Group as an umbrella organisation to retain a cultural ethos and to kind of keep alive Bealey's of Grafton Street, to keep the doors open. That's done with great subsidy and... And I think having the Cafe Theatre as a cultural institution is very important to the identity of the Bealey's brand.
The Arts Council and Dublin City Council have been very supportive of the venue, and we're very grateful for it. They're delighted that we provide this cultural entertainment in the middle of the day for people who can't come into town at night, for people who are looking to double up on their cultural experiences throughout the day. They also know that we're part of a wider system, and by giving prominent actors, established actors, the power to instigate their own work, we are allowing them to hone their skills, to stay active. And then we also have a very important role with emerging talent. So we've hosted the Dublin Fringe Festival every year since it started. And we were part of this Show in a Bag festival, started with Fish Amble Theatre Company. And we also give out the Little Gem Award for the best show under an hour, because actually the shows are always under an hour. It's usually only 45 minutes that we're looking for. The best show each year, we give them money in order to come back and be seen by a wider audience, because the Fringe would have a young, youthful audience. This year, there's going to be a play about Gerry Ryan called Lambo that we're going to have as part of our programme. And while this subsidy from the Arts Council and Dublin City Council is absolutely essential, it pales in significance to what we're getting every day of the week from Bealey's Cafe Theatre itself. We don't have to pay for heating, electricity, insurance. And that level of support is probably unique in Irish business to arts life.
It was my concern since the inception of the company that it would never become a vanity project. It was always important for me to keep my identity as an actor kind of separate to the company. And my driving force was very much as a producer and kind of keeping the company alive and contributing whatever I could in a practical way. In fact, actually, I had only ever intended to kind of say to Michael, listen, I've kind of got the commitment from Bealey's to open it as a full-time venue. It'd be great. You sound like a really good guy to do the thing. So off you go, and that'll be grand. And if you need anything, just give me a call. I'll help out in whatever way I can. 10 years later, I am still schlepping furniture, couches up the stairs, and midnight hour press releases. And
one of the things that's really lovely about Bewley's Cafe Theatre is the room itself, which is a really gorgeous atmosphere. Performers tend to love it, and it can be really transformed by set and light, so you come into a whole different world. And it's a slightly different theatre experience because you have the opportunity to get your soup. There's a little bit of time before the show. You share tables with people. There's more opportunity to chat and interact. So it's got a little bit more going than your kind of average night at the theatre. And of course, if you're a regular at Bewley's Cafe Theatre, you're going to know Colin Marr, who's our front of house manager and technical manager, who knows half the audience by name at this stage. And he adds a real warm atmosphere to it as well.
When we started the venue, it took a while for the staff in Bewley's to fully understand that there was a show going on and that it shouldn't be disturbed. And it was in the days of the old uniforms, the black and white uniforms. Sometimes you get someone opening the door of the cafe theatre right in the middle of a silent moment in the show going, "Oh, sorry, I was looking for Mary." And then realising that there was an audience all looking at them and then shutting the door behind them again. Or punters wandering in going, "Is this the cafe theatre?" in the middle of the show.
In the early days, we did have issues with buskers playing on Grafton Street during the shows and spoiling the mood in the theatre. And we made the mistake of going down and paying for them to stop playing. Of course, then they all started arriving at lunchtime in the middle of the day, knowing that they were getting paid for doing nothing. But that's very unusual. There's a great fraternity amongst artists. And nowadays, they're all aware on Grafton Street that between 1 and 2, they have to stay away from the Bewley section of Grafton Street. And then they play to the heart's content at other times.
Sometimes the buskers either aren't aware or choose to ignore and set up. And of course, today with speakers, that can be quite loud. And the front of house manager, Colm, has been known to leg it down 4 flights of stairs in between lighting cues to ask them to stop and leg it back up and be in time there for the show to continue.
There were the famous Dublin kids who used to sing "The Fields of Athenry." And Kelly had the bright idea, don't get the money, but feed them. So she brought them in and gave them a huge lunch. And of course, all week they were turning up just for the lunch.
And of course, we've had the experience of buskers on our stage because it's a music venue in the evening times. Lisa O'Neill is a well-known busker who got picked up. She's also worked for Bewley's Cafe and poured out the soups. She has recently been picked up by an agency, signed to a label. She's toured the world as support act to David Gray. And that all started as a busker on Grafton Street that came into our theatre.
I directed How He Lied to Her Husband by George Bernard Shaw with Tara Quirk, Rory Keenan and Arthur Reardon. It was, I suppose, my directorial debut. I was very nervous, but I really enjoyed it. I had a great cast, and we had a very elaborate set. It was set in a Victorian drawing room, and in the spirit of generosity from my family, we had to borrow a lot of furniture from the house and take it in to the building and upstairs and use it. So I'd be at home. I was living at home at the time, and I'd be at home and my mum would hurt, "Where's the kitchen chair gone? That lamp?" Or and Michael, I mean, my mum would say, "Look, it's fine if you want to borrow a chair thing." But Michael had no qualms about ringing up every second or third production, taking advantage. Very often he'd be seen very... He got so used to the idea of props coming out of the house that he'd just show up at the house, open the boot of the car, knock on the door and say, "I was just, you know," and my mum would say, "Yeah, go ahead, Michael, whatever you need, fine."
I directed Hue and Cry by Deirdre Kinhin, which was a one-act play with Carl Shields and Will O'Connell and went on to great success. It travelled to Bulgaria, Romania. It won awards in New York. But on our opening night, or opening lunchtime, we had a poor woman pass out right in the middle of the climax of the show. She had actually had a heart procedure a week prior and the heat had just gotten to her. And despite the fact that she passed out, the show continued on. Paramedics arrived and whisked her out one way, in back in through the door, because she could only be gotten out in the wheelchair through the lift. And even still, we opened to great reviews. It turns out she was fine.
We had an opera at the Cafe Theatre. Now, this was a sort of an insanely ambitious idea. It was Pagliacci the Opera by Wonderland Productions. And of course, it was cut down to size for lunchtime. We had 2 casts because the singers needed to look after their voices. We had hordes of people walking past the waiting staff doing their vocal warm-ups at huge volumes. And the resulting opera was an extraordinary experience for our audience. It was opera singers up close. I don't know if anyone else has had that experience. It was a one-off.
We had a great success with The Lilly Lally Show, starring Barbara Brennan, which had originally been done in the Abbey as a rare thing for the Abbey, where they did three short one acts. And had Barbara Brennan, Mark O'Halloran directed it. It came together beautifully. We had a fantastic backdrop, specially commissioned. Again, this generosity towards the venue. We happened to find a scenic artist who was working in the Gaiety, who did a cut price job to do this beautiful backdrop. And on the day of the opening, Hugh Leonard came in and he said, I don't want to spoil your day, but you've misspelled the title everywhere. Every piece of publicity, every poster, every flyer. And I wrote him a short note of apologies and he said, don't worry about it. There was a scene, a guy employed to do the cinema listings in Bray who used to paint the sign up back in the 1950s. And he said he was sacked after he left out a vowel in the Count of Monte Cristo.
I suppose there's been a great sense of community around the Café Theatre, as there is in generally, because Dublin is a small city. Those working in the business, everyone knows each other. Everyone kind of has a conversation with each other about the work. Every play has a conversation with another play. What's going on in the Gate has a conversation with what's going on in the Abbey, for instance, and the project. And I think our role has been quite important in that sense. And when I'm talking about the support in kind, I think there is a great generosity towards the Café Theatre. And it's interesting that we started out pre-Celtic Tiger boom times. And in those days, I guess there was more of a precedent for, you know, everyone borrowing things or people doing favours. And then throughout the boom, when we were maybe getting more like official support from the Arts Council and Dublin City Council, and Bewley's was a bit more able to kind of offer a permanent level of support for us, there was maybe a little bit more restraint. It was interesting, you know, that everyone kind of got a bit big for their boots in some ways, not in totality, but there was a bit more sense of, oh, well, what is my weekly wage now, instead of the spirit of generosity that had preceded. And I think now that things are much harder, that has come back again. And I think that's been very enjoyable for us, is that we can kind of break those things down again. And I think it's very important for our role has become maybe even more important for supporting new writing, new directing, and actors are maybe more available, having been less more busy on big film productions or big TV shows, and less willing to commit to a 6-week run in a lunchtime venue. I think it's given us more opportunity to kind of explore those avenues.
Angus Og McNally's was the first show in a bag to really take fire. That's the way Bewley's, it was called Fight Night. And it was a show written by Gavin Costick, but it was Angus's own idea. And it was about a boxer who was third generation boxer. Angus himself is third generation actor. And the boxer had to say that he felt that he wasn't really talented enough to get his big fight, and that he'd only gotten it because of what his name was. And of course, everybody in the audience knew Angus might worry. His grandfather was Ray McAnally. That must be a pressure. And we knew that he was talking about his own life.
One of the my favourite things that I've done there as an actress was a show called Lovely Betty that I did with Mark O'Halloran, the late Tom Murphy, and Karen Egan directing. So it was myself, Tom and Mark. We played three layabouts living in a flat somewhere off Dorset Street. And Tom was a zookeeper, Mark was a slacker, and I was a goth who used to hang around the Central Bank a lot. So it was just kind of about our life in the flat. And we had an obsession with a radio that was called Lovely Betty. And our favourite time of the day was listening to the Ronan Collins show. And we needed to have a voiceover of Ronan Collins for the show. So we asked Ronan Collins, would he oblige us with the voiceover? And he said, sure, no problem. And we invited him to do a recording in the venue. But what we had to do was we had to do a makeshift kind of little sound booth that was like a foot of space behind the stage covered by a piece of MDF. And in order to soundproof it, we had to put a mattress up. So Ronan Collins came in. Ronan Collins came into the theatre and we said, OK, this is where we're going to do the recording. And he kind of looked across and he said, OK, great. He was such a good sport. So we asked him, he said, yeah, OK, so could you just step in there? And then we sealed it up with a mattress. So there was Ronan Collins behind the stage and us on the other side of the mattress. And he said, OK, right, roll it now, Ronan. So we did the recording and then he took the tapes for editing and obliged us by dropping them off to the venue later on.
And the fantastic thing about that show, Ronan Collins really did feature very prominently. And he had to make the announcement. The climax of the show is that the Tom Murphy character goes on the run with this giraffe, and there's a big nationwide hunt to try and find Tom and the stolen giraffe. But in the meantime, the Mark O'Halloran character absolutely worshipped Ronan Collins' work as a radio presenter. And there was the talk around RTE saying, do you realise there's a theatre show in town that says Ronan Collins is a genius?
It was a real privilege. It was my only time ever working with Tom. He was such a magnificent actor, but had a kind of very laid-back attitude. So we devised the show in Karen's living room, and we'd show up maybe in the morning, and myself and Mark and Karen would be working for about a couple of hours expecting Tom to arrive at some stage. I think actually, to be fair to Tom, I think he was filming at the time, so he wasn't able to. But our huge resentment was that we'd done all this hard work and then Tom just came and completely stole the show. He had an obsession with a giraffe called Unkala in the zoo. It was a baby giraffe, and he kept a long photograph of the giraffe in his shirt pocket. But part of the show was that he stripped off and unveiled himself, painted as in giraffe spots. And part of our job was to paint him as a giraffe every morning. So he'd come in reeking sometimes. And we'd lie him down on the floor and we'd start with the yellow paint. And actually there was smoking in the building at the time, so he'd be smoking a cigarette and us painting him yellow and then the brown spots. And then he'd have to stand very still and dry.
And we had some very exciting times in those early days of getting suitable production shots. So the very first show we did was called Her Big Chance by Alan Bennett. And we took some shots on a beautiful yacht out in Hoth Harbour. Kelly had very rich friends with a very beautiful yacht that just fitted the bill nicely. And then on another occasion, there was a production of Tennessee Williams' This Property is Condemned with Sarah Jane Drummy and Owen McDonnell. And for that, we thought a nice railway line shot. And we went out illegally, trespassed on the railway, dodging express trains as we got just what we wanted of these two deep south lost folk on the railway lines on a baking hot day. But probably the most exciting of Kelly's production photographic excursions was a guerrilla raid to the Natural History Museum to take production shots for a play called Buridan's Ass, which is all about a philandering taxidermist, and starred Arthur Reardon and Frank Burke. It was written by a very, very eccentric man called Steve Plant, who lives as a hermit in eastern France, in Burgundy, and whose obsession is with taxidermy. And if you're interested in Steve Plant, you can catch up on his life on his blog, Musings of a Failed Taxidermist. But anyway, there we were, Frank Burke and Arthur Reardon in rubber aprons in the Natural History Museum. My 12-year-old son was posted as lookout on one of the upper galleries, and we'd be getting pictures beside the walrus, beside the elephant, beside the zebra. And every so often, members of staff would come and try and figure out what was going on. Sam would be whistling from up above. And the photographs were absolutely magnificent. And they had that sort of authentic sense of danger about them.
Where we really get to show off, though, is when we adapt things to make them work on our stage. So, like, you don't always see one-act plays. Sometimes we take short stories from Wilde or from, I'm thinking of the Birthday Party, which is a lovely short story by Chekhov that's not written for the stage, even though he wrote plays for the stage. But a young company, Mirari, adapted it, and Katrine Niverk, who performed in it. And at the time, it was in February, the character she was playing was 7 months pregnant. She was 8 months pregnant. So the big joke at the time was, would she get to the end of the run before her other production happened to come on stage?
We recently had a show called The Diceman, which was about the story of Tom McGinty, who is a well-known and much-loved street performer and mime artist. And that was a really great thing for people who knew him on the street. I remember myself as a teenager walking past Tom McGinty and getting one of those winks off him and getting such a thrill. So it was great to be able to have a show about Tom just off the street where he worked.
We pride ourselves on being a place where prominent theatre people can instigate their own projects from scratch. Tom Hickey came to us wanting to do The Kiss, which is his play about a priest who kisses a boy. And that was incredibly relevant at the time, and we turned it over in 6 weeks, because when Tom Hickey wants to do something, you get it done. Peter Sheridan is another one that we're really lucky to have. You know, Jim's brother, he's an amazing man of the theatre and Dublin theatre. Peter Sheridan would be known for his memoir pieces, 47 Roses, Roses, and he did this play, Break a Leg, which is his most recent memoir. And those plays really took off for us, and we've had him back numerous times, and he's one of our favourite personalities in the venue.
What's great is it can be a real impromptu decision. You're in town, you decide to go in, you don't have to be dressed up, buy your ticket, have your lunch. It's an hour long, so you're in and you're out, and you've had this lovely tasty morsel in the middle of the day.
The idea of a lunchtime play, it's such a nice thing to do. You find yourself in town on an errand, getting your passport sorted or whatever, and you can find your way to Grafton Street, to Bewley's Cafe, we all know where that is, and up on the second floor. You come in at 1 o'clock every day, Monday to Saturday. There's always a one-act play on, usually very funny, very high-calibre acting. A lot of people meet friends there and have the chats afterwards. And yet you're still home. It's the perfect crime. You can be home in time to pick up the kids or put your dinner on. So next time you're walking down Grafton Street, do yourself a favour. Be good to the artists. Call in and have a coffee at Bewley's Cafe. Check out the Harry Clark windows. Visit the James Joyce room and see a play in the lunchtime theatre.